Hey, folks, in this interview, it's all about color with Julianne Cost, an evangelist from Adobe.
This is TWIP.
Hey, welcome back to This Week in Photo. I'm your host, Frederick Van Johnson. You know, it seems like this month we've been talking a lot about color. We've been talking about just diving deep into the nuts and bolts and DNA of photography, composition, color, exposure, you know, those sorts of things, the nuts and bolts that make up photography beyond the gear stuff that everyone obsesses over. I'm lucky enough today to have someone on the show who's amazingly talented. I mean, if you haven't heard of her body of work or what she does for a living, you will certainly know after this interview, but it's Julianne Cost, as I mentioned in the tease, and Julianne is an evangelist at Adobe. We're going to find out what evangelism is at Adobe, but more importantly, we're going to dive into color and get our feet wet and kind of, you know, hopefully make it less scary for people who are afraid to sort of experiment with color and use it as a compositional element. Julianne Cost, welcome to This Week in Photo. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. So thank you so much for inviting me on the program. It's great to see you again.
It is great to see you again. Like we were saying before we started recording, I don't even want to put a number on how long it's been since I've seen you. It's been way too long. And, you know, I remember when I was working at Adobe, my office was just down the way from yours. And from time to time, I would come over and bug you, you know, and ask
never,
you questions.
Never bugging us. We worked together really well.
Yeah, so. We did. I would come down and ask you, you know, esoteric questions about Photoshop, because you know everything there is to know about Photoshop and that software.
No, not true. And I've forgotten a lot. In fact, yeah, I think I've forgotten more than I know now.
Oh, you probably forgotten more than I know. No, but that's awesome. So I want to let's start there. So first of all, I mentioned you're an evangelist. So for the folks who may not know what an evangelist does in tech, what is an evangelist? Let me set the stage. Before coming to Adobe, the only evangelist that I had ever heard of was Guy Kawasaki at Apple. He was an evangelist at Apple, and you know, and that's kind of what kind of drew me into the Apple fold. What does an evangelist do at Adobe?
So my role at Adobe is to create, hopefully, inspiring and also educational information and get that out to people, our customers, however I can. So whether that's a live event or through a blog post or social media, anything to help our customers learn our products and, you know, really improve their photography or their design or whatever area of their field is.
And what would you consider yourself? Because you're looking at the stuff that you do, even back when I was at Adobe, you do some really cool, compartmentalized bodies of work. Like you'll give yourself a project and then just, you know, like you were doing that project and many people remember back in the day, you did a project where you were doing photographs out of plane windows. You remember that?
Yeah.
But it's self-contained. It's like you have this epiphany and do something brilliant and now you have this thing and then you move on to the next thing. Tell us about what defines you? Photographer, designer, creative? What do you call yourself when people ask you?
Yeah, let's not limit it because then I don't want to get in that argument of like, well, photographers don't composite multiple images together. So borrowing this from Keith Carter, who's a wonderful photographer whose work I really admire, and he calls himself a lens-based artist. So if we have to put me in a box, I think that's a pretty big box to put me in.
I'm stealing that.
It's totally great, right? Because yes. Then there's no more conversation about, you know, what's proper or what's correct. You know, can you crop? Well, if you can crop, but can you distort images? And then, what if you put two images together? Yeah. You know, it's a slippery slope. So I prefer just to say, you know, I'm not a documentary photographer. So I'm kind of allowed to do anything I want with my photos.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I remember having dinner with a local photographer. I don't know if he's still local, Stephen Johnson. You know Stephen Johnson, right?
Absolutely. Great guy.
And we were just down the street from Adobe, and we were having this discussion, let's say, about what was proper photography. And this was a while ago. So, and he was of the mind that proper photography means you don't touch it, right? You don't manipulate the image, and what you see is what you get. And, you know, so it's the truth. You're a photographer. So your job is to tell the truth or whatever. And my response, and I forget who else was there. Another Adobe person was there. I forget who it was, but our response was, But you're making choices along the way. You're making choices about focal length. Even if you're shooting film, you're making choices about the film stock that you're going to use. You know, all this stuff is going into the enlarger and printing the image. You're making choices. Why not just make those choices digitally? So, you know, it was an interesting conversation.
I think it's a continuum, and I think everyone has their own process. So for me, I don't mind. You know, I think it takes all types of photographers. I'm super happy with photojournalists. I mean, they can capture it all in camera and everything. I think it's amazing, and it's more documentary. And then there's just, you know, I just don't put those limitations on myself. But it doesn't mean that other people, you know, are wrong to do that. I mean, some of them obviously have to, like morally and ethically. But I guess I'm just fortunate that I don't have to, and I can go do what I want.
Exactly. I mean, that's the whole thing of creative. You can be whatever you want. It's subjective, subjectivity at its finest. But I want to dive into the whole color part of this conversation, because that's going to be really exciting. But before that, I want to just do a little check in on software, right? Like I mentioned, you are, you know, okay, you don't know everything about Photoshop, but you know more than most carbon-based life forms on the planet. Let's say that. So, you know, and I'm not going to put you on the spot, obviously. I know you can't talk about anything future or coming up or anything like that. But for folks that are using Photoshop today, you know, it has sort of become, you know, as you know, it's become part of the lexicon. It is part of our language in terms of how we describe digital manipulation or whatever, you know, for better or for worse. What do you think, what's missing today? You know, in terms of, you know, there's a constellation of software out there on mobile, you know, and people say, yeah, mobile's the future. Everything's going to mobile. And then you hear, no, you know, professionals need a proper computer. What do you think is missing in terms of the feature set that we need as, you know, sort of lens-based artists or photographers or whatever we call ourselves in order to make our work, take our work to the next level? Or conversely, are we already there? Like, are we arguing about something? Are we arguing about a spaceship, you know, that, you know, and sort of discounting the fact that we're able to go to space? You know, what do you think about that?
Well, I think that, for me personally, one of the things that has happened over the last few years is the whole like connectivity of devices. So I don't think that there's not one camera and one lens, there's not like one device for all photographers or all creative individuals. So the more devices we can get the applications on, which are basically the tools that we use to create things, then the better off everyone's going to be. So it's not a small feat to get that connectivity when different, you know, just think about like an iPad versus a phone versus a desktop machine. They're all designed and have special kind of considerations for the usability of those products. And so to get something to work across all of them, I mean, that's what I want, because I'm not always sitting at my desktop. I'm not always wanting to do something on my phone. So to be able to connect across all my devices and access everything at all times, that to me is super interesting.
Yeah, no, I agree. And yeah, and things just change so quickly, right? So, you know, I was having a conversation just yesterday with a friend of mine. We were talking about portraiture, and we were trying to define, even on Wikipedia, we were trying to define what portraiture is, and we still haven't been successful, but it sort of came to the conclusion that portraiture, the word portraiture, came about a long time ago, right? When people were you had a portrait session and you went for many weeks to sit for your portrait, and they worked on it, whether it was a sculpture or art. But now things are a little bit different. Things have changed, right? So do we need, like, from your opinion, do we need a new set of words to describe the stuff that we're doing? You know, even in photography, portraiture, landscape, macro, all this stuff, all these things are fluid, because there's many different ways to do things. And as you said, there's the whole compositing side of things. You know, do we need new words, or should we just, you know, forget about labels and just move forward and create art?
I think you're right. I mean, I think it's fluid, and it's always going to be fluid, and it always has been fluid, right? We've moved from 4x5s or 8x10s to 4x5s to 35mm to mobile devices and everything, and it's going to continue to evolve as the technology evolves, and our vocabulary will evolve as well.
Yeah.
So I think just to have maybe a bit of a broader mind when you use your vocabulary, that it might encompass additional things. For me, for because you were asking about the future as well.
Yeah.
I think for me, one of the really exciting things is, you know, how some of the things that I didn't really care to do. I mean, I don't really want to sit and have to retouch every pixel. And so now all of a sudden we've got like Lightroom where I can do things so much more quickly and so much better, honestly, like to be able to process. Cause I do believe that making the image, right? Whatever you capture, that is definitely half of the equation. But the other half of the equation is what you do after that, what you do in post-process. And whether that's because you're trying to get an image to look like the actual scene in which it was taken, or whether you're embellishing that to look like something else, that's just, you know, your personal choice. But what I've noticed in the last, especially 5 years, and maybe with something, an example would be like with Lightroom, with the presets and the profiles, right? Mm-hmm. Super powerful tools that are really easy to use and help me get to where I want to go more quickly. So for me, that is also really exciting.
Yeah. You know, the one of the other sort of buzzwords in the industry, in many industries, you know, self-driving cars and, you know, technology or artistic type technology like Photoshop, et cetera, is artificial intelligence, you know, and, but where does the line, where do we draw the line? I read this article, I think it was a couple of days ago, and it was, you may have seen this. It was talking about how, you know, you can have the, they had this computer, it's basically an experiment, this software artificial intelligence algorithm that was able to generate completely fake people that looked realistic. Right?
I did see that. So, you know, that's kind of a whole nother topic that we could spend hours on.
I know.
For me, I'm thinking more of artificial intelligence in our products, such as, you know, like keywording. I mean, I'm embarrassed to say, like, I spent my first sabbatical, I spent 3 weeks back in the Wayback Machine keywording my entire image library. I don't care to ever do that again. So when I see something like Adobe Sensei, which is what we're calling our artificial intelligence, right?
Yeah.
Like, being able to find all of the images that have a puppy or a seal or something in them, anything that can help me, I love. Or in Photoshop, more specifically, it would be like, you know, we have select subject. So that was trained through AI. Or the auto button in Lightroom Classic, you know, to auto tone images. That was trained using, you know, millions of photographs. So things like that, they are going to help me be more productive, be more efficient. And so I totally embrace that technology. And I think, like all technology, you know, whether we use it for good or evil, we just have to see how that turns out. But for me, anything that can help me with the mundane, you know, kind of busy work of photography, I'm more than happy to let a artificial intelligent personal assistant help me out there.
Yeah, and that's what computers are for, right? They're supposed to make our lives, or technology in general is supposed to make our lives easier, not harder or more complex.
Right, because we still have to come up with the creative ideas, right? It's our vision. It's our message. We're the ones who are trying to communicate something to other people. So I don't think they're going to replace that anymore. They can help us, but they're not coming up with the ideas.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll have to do another interview at some point where we talk about, you know, the implications of AI, because like you said, any tool can be used for good and evil, right? So, and humans are known to do both, right? So,
yes. So,
you know, there's a lot of stuff going on with this deep fake stuff and, you know, everything. So we'll talk about that another time, but I want to talk about color. And
okay.
This amazing, like I said, you give yourself these projects and then you make amazing bodies of work. The latest one is all about color. Tell me about that one, you know, and what was the impetus of this project? It's called The Color of Place. Is that?
Yes.
Okay. Tell me about The Color of Place.
Okay. So for those of you who don't know much about me, so I do have a background in psychology, and I've always been interested in the study of human behavior and sort of more specifically, like how things in our environment or how external things can influence how we behave and how we act and how we think. And at the same time, I've always liked photography, of course, and more as a way of self-expression, right? And maybe to gain self-awareness and reflection. Like I did a project once just on trying to figure out, you know, just taking a picture every day, like so many people do. And it's a great project because then if you look at that body of work afterwards, you can really start to see the relationship between what you photograph, where you photograph, how you feel when you photograph. So it's that involvement of psychology and photography, kind of that pairing that's really interesting to me.
Yeah.
So, And my dad and my mom, of course, played a big role in this. So my mom is a graphic designer and she was a silk screener. And so that's a very additive process, right? And for me, what I realize now is that in my photography, because I was always taking very graphic images and I didn't know why. And I was feeling like, oh, well, you know, I'm not getting that epic landscape. I'm taking this little detail over here. Why is that? And I think it's because of that additive process and the influence of my mom, where she only included things in her designs that were critical to the design. So she filtered everything else out. And then my dad, he also did photography. He's an engineer. And so when we would go photograph together, of course, the only thing I wanted to do as a teenager was take a picture that was different from my father.
Yeah, so, of course.
Because that's what you do at that age, right? So it's kind of these two influences that also can help, you know, bring this body of work together. But I joined Adobe a long time ago. For those of you who don't know, like in 92, I was in technical support and then user education. And then I took this job as evangelism. And the reason that I tell you that is because that led me to be on the road a significant portion of my time. And like you mentioned earlier, Frederick, that led me to taking pictures out the window of a plane because that's where I was finding my inspiration.
And that's where you were living, right?
And yes, I was there. It was either there or a conference center or a hotel room or the back of a cab, you know, getting from one place to another. And so the thing is that that taught me a very important lesson, which was you need to weave in your photography, especially if you're not doing it full time, you need to weave it into your life, like your daily life. Like it's really easy to pick a project. And I have some of these where, you know, you have to travel to these exotic places and you have to be there exactly the right time of day if you're getting northern lights or whatever it is you're doing. But how do you, as just a normal human being, also involve photography on a daily basis? And so even though it seems like, oh, you took pictures out the plane window, well, that's because that's where I was. Or I did another book called Passenger Seat, which was motion blur out the window of a car. Mm-hmm. But again, that's where I found myself. So even though you might not think that you have like something really interesting and that's really accessible, everyone does because everyone lives a different life. I mean, you might have, I don't know, you might have access to horses or something or farm. I mean, everyone has different experiences. So I guess this is just the latest, the Color of Place project is just the latest in these series of personal projects that I've tried to weave into my life.
And then what's the ultimate goal, Julianne? Is down the road, do you see, a volume one, the book of Julianne Cost and all the projects that you've done over, you know, a certain time span and then leading into the next one. You ever plan to put them all together and make them available, or are you just going to keep them all to yourself? And
I don't know if they all go together or not. It's, you know, it's kind of goes against the, what we think of as a traditional photographer who is known for one specific style. But I find that maybe my attention span isn't that long. I mean, I love to create bodies of work, but just because I create one doesn't mean that I have to do that forever. I'm okay with saying, you know what, that body of work is done. And that's what, so this Color of Place, that is definitely falls into that category. Like I'm done. So when I do take on a project, a lot of times I will do a few things in order to help me just define the project. Like I always try to work backwards from a project. I find that's really helpful. So with this project, I thought, all right, I need to know more about color. Well, actually, let's back up one more step. So what I was really thinking when I started the project was, why, when I go to some locations, do I take better images, basically? I mean, I was looking and noticing that when I went to Berlin, it was a 3-day trip, but I somehow managed to take a very cohesive, unified body of work. And then when I went to Antarctica, it happened the same way. And so I started wondering, like, why were those two locations really successful? Whereas when I went to the U.S. Virgin Islands, like, I was not successful at all. I couldn't even find the images later to make really a color of place from that location. And so I started analyzing my images, which I think is super important for everyone to do, not only analyze the good ones, but also compare them with the bad ones and figure out, like, okay, and I won't call them good and bad, that's kind of judgy, but let's say the ones that you think are more successful and the ones that you think weren't as successful, like look at those ones that aren't as successful and try to figure out why. So the common theme that became very obvious very quickly was color in mind. Like when I was in locations that had muted colors or similar colors, monochrome, whatever, lack of color, lack of saturation, I was much more successful taking images there.
But see, there's a, you know, what I want to dive into is just, how do you see that, right? Because like you said, you have a background in, I mean, you've had parental units that were creatives, you know, yeah, which influenced you presumably, and you're a fantastic artist. You see color, you understand composition, all those things. But new photographers that are coming in, you know, may be afraid of color or may not understand the impact and the power of using color. And some people even go so far as to say, you know what, I'm a black and white photographer. I only see the world in shades of gray, right? So because they're afraid of color, so in some cases, you know, they're afraid.
Right. Not in all cases.
Not in all cases. Yeah.
That's its own art.
Of course. Right? Of course. Black and white is fantastic. But some people shy away from color because they're not exactly sure how to leverage it in their own work. How, you know, we're not going to solve it in this interview, obviously, but what are some steps that photographers can take to see better in color and to sort of change the way that they're looking at the world so that they see, like you said, the muted colors and more vibrant colors? How can they get that sense of color in a place?
I think it just takes study, right? So when I defined this and I started working backwards, I said, okay, so I want this project to be, I decided I want to print them really large. Like I want to print them like 6 feet. So that determined the size of the images that I had to work with. So I knew I was going to be working with really large images. I also defined, all right, how many images are going to be in this body of work? So I thought, all right, well, I want 25 from all over the world. So I'm going to pick 25 locations. And then I thought, all right, so then how long is this project going to take you? And I gave myself 6 weeks because I just said, I can't do this forever. I just need to learn about color. And I also gave myself some reading assignments. So I bought some books and some of my friends, I kind of mentioned the project and they recommended some books, but most of it honestly was online reading just about color theory and complementary colors and split complementary colors and things like that. So this whole concept of, you know, if you're afraid to use color, I don't know if people are afraid to use color or they just haven't found the colors that work for them yet. Mm-hmm. So the color, I mean, for me, why I would use a color in a photograph is because it's going to reiterate the message that I'm trying to drive with the color. So that's why I think sometimes when people start applying presets, you know, they look at a photographer's work and they start applying these presets because they love that work. And then they realize, well, you know, it's not working with my images. Well, because it's not just color. It's the way that the color plays with the subject matter. So if, you know, color tells a story, and you can look at a lot of cinematography, the way they color grade the movies, you know, if you want to tell a story that's bleak and in the future, then maybe you're going to use some green tones and you're going to really dial back the saturation. So it's just really starting to look at color, because as you use those presets, for example, if you've got like a really happy little baby and you're using some futuristic bleak preset on it, it's not going to go over well, right?
Right.
So it's a balance of the content as well as the color.
Yeah. Unless you're doing like a Chucky film or something, then.
Yeah, exactly. Like there's always exceptions. I'm just saying as a broad statement, look at the content, look at the way people are dressed, right? Like if they're dressed in super modern clothes, then maybe an older like preset that's kind of aged isn't going to look as good as maybe a more modern preset.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Julian, you said, I'm taking notes here, obviously. You said something that really, you know, sort of resonated with me. You begin with the end in mind and you define, you put your project in a box. And I use the word project because we've been talking about personal projects on This Week in Photo, but you talk about projects from a body of work standpoint, it sounds like, which I like that better. You know, you're creating a finite, compartmentalized body of work versus personal project. Sounds like, okay, I got to go build a treehouse in the backyard, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's just a body of work. It's just a small body of work. And by defining it, then you don't have project creep, right? Because once I define all these things, I am limiting the scope. I mean, I could tell a class of students to, you know, go out and take 20 pictures, and, you know, some students would just go out and take it, and other ones would be lost, like, of what? Mm-hmm. Right? So you have to sit there and go, okay, well, let's just narrow it down. Like, if I told you to take 20 pictures of chairs, at least you have a theme. So when I define a body of work, then I also do little things to really help push that body of work along. So for example, you know, once I've defined how many and all that, I would make those collections in Lightroom. So in this case, what I did is I took, for the colors of place, I took 50 of my favorite images from each shoot that I thought best represented that location. Okay. So I took those images and I put them in a collection in Lightroom. And so now I have 25 different collections. And every time I finished one, I would color code it to be like, check, I'm done. And that gives me like this visual representation of, I am doing this. I am moving this project forward. Because sometimes, you know, if you don't set a duration, I don't know, it gives like an intensity to it for me. And I make sure I tell a few key people so that I've got this, you know, this deadline. I told our social media people, like, I want to have this done by January. And I told a friend of mine, this is what I'm going to do. And now all of a sudden I'm held accountable. And they're like, so how's that going? And I said, yeah, well, it makes me make better choices of what I do with my time.
Yeah. Yeah. And then speaking of time, are you doing multiple of these, you know, body of work projects at a time, or do you just set yourself on one tangent? It's linear. I'm on to the next one. How do you manage that?
I always try to have more than one because just life happens and you can't always do the project that you have intended. Mm-hmm. So I always find it's really good to have more than one project because also sometimes it's just maybe you're thinking ahead of your skill set or something, and you just need to set that aside while you do maybe a smaller project that will help you with maybe one aspect of a larger project.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because photography, I mean, it's a continuous education, right? It's not like you go to school for a year and then you're done and you're like, I know photography. Mm-hmm. Like, no way. Like, I hope not. I hope I haven't learned everything.
Yeah. We're all practicing, right? We're practicing.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah. I love it. Well, cool. This is fantastic. If people want to take a look at some of these bodies of work that you put together, what's a good location where you've got them sort of all corralled together for easy consumption?
Okay. Well, I have two. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested in looking at the bodies of work, that would just be jcos.net. So that's an Adobe portfolio that I've put together. And that's really easy to go to. And then if you want to look at more about like Photoshop and Lightroom and how-tos and instruction, that would be my blog. So that's blogs.adobe.com/jcost, J-K-O-S-T.
Awesome. Yeah. Julianne Cost, it's a pleasure. It's been a pleasure. It's been way too long. You and I are going to have lunch very soon.
That would be lovely. It has been too long. It's been great to see you. And thanks again for having me on the show.
You're welcome. Thank you so much. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
This is Twitter.